limiting. Except you didn't nail your colors to a single mast after all, did you, Mal? In fact, you have no right to lecture me about integrity. Not if what Mr. Finn says about your past behavior is true, and I have no reason to believe it isn't. You have earned yourself a reputation around Evesdown and elsewhere as someone with a very elastic approach to ethics. Give Malcolm Reynolds a job, chances are he'll let you down or wind up screwing you over. That's what they say. Trust him no further than you could throw him. Couple of bad reviews. They stay with you forever, Mal said. Everyone ignores the many satisfied customers I've had. And to answer your question, I'm here because I was invited. I've been in cahoots with these here brown coat fellas for a while now, and I still haven't yet seen firsthand how they operate. As they were going to be on Hades, practically in my backyard, I thought I'd take up Mr. Finn's invitation and fly on over. It's always a good idea to learn as much as you can about a business partner's practices. And I guess maybe you got an appetite for summary executions as well, huh? Mal said. You get off on it. Covington shook his head firmly, but not that firmly. I'm not that barbaric. I can't deny, however, a certain curiosity. How will a man like you face up to death, Reynolds? With a wink and a quip, or blubbering in abject terror? I'd be curious myself to see how you manage it, Covington, because I get the chance, you're the one who'll be facing up to death. Brave talk, considering how this trial appears to be almost at an end. Didn't I hear Mr. Finn just say you were about to get your comeuppance? Seems to me that sentence is shortly to be pronounced. Isn't that so, Mr. Finn? Toby Finn nodded. You're quite right, Hunter. In fact, as I told you, you couldn't have timed your arrival better. All that remains is for me to furnish the clinching proof that Mal killed Jenny Adair, and then we can get down to the punishment. I have that proof right here, but a little background first. Mal was just saying that we were called up to fight shortly after the Alliance attack on Shadow. It wasn't even a week, was it? Jenny only just planted in the ground, and troop carriers arrived to ship us out. Only when we were aboard did we learn which regiments we'd be joining. We'd had our skills assessed at boot camp and were assigned accordingly. Mal went to the 57th Overlanders, Jamie and I to the 19th Sunbeamers. Mal became a ground pounder, Jamie and I space commandos. The Sunbeamers acquitted themselves honorably in many a battle, so I hear, said Covington. I myself participated in dozens of ship-to-ship actions. I took my fair share of Alliance scalps. But Jamie? Jamie was in a league of his own. That man fought with a righteous fury that burned hotter than a sun. Alliance had just killed his sister. He wasn't going to let them forget that. Jamie Adair never took a single prisoner. You were an Alliance trooper and got in his way, woe betide you. He was single-minded, laser-focused, deadly as hell. I overheard a major once say that if he had 100 soldiers like Jamie, the war would be over within a week. But he was reckless, too. Jamie, see, didn't care if he lived or died. He was just this big, seething ball of hate. Nothing mattered to him except taking out as many of the enemy as he could. He died at Sturgis. The Battle of Sturgis was one of the bloodiest of the war, rivaled in ferocity and numbers of casualties only by Serenity Valley, and was fought over money. A hoard of victory spoils being carried by a freighter, the Sublime, back to the Core from the Rim. The Browncoats were keen to get their hands on this loot in order to help fund their war effort. Just off the planet Sturgis, independent ships attacked the freighter's armed escort at considerable cost to their own forces. Space commandos then boarded the Sublime herself, only to discover that she had been booby-trapped, rigged to explode if a failsafe mechanism was triggered by the captain. Rather than let the loot fall into independent hands, the captain sacrificed himself and everyone else aboard. Jamie was one of the first onto the Sublime, Toby said. I didn't reach it. My spacesuit developed a radiation shielding malfunction, and I had to return to my ship. If not for that, I'd have gone up with Sublime like Jamie and most of the rest of the regiment. That was the end of the 19th Sunbeamers. After that, the regiment was disbanded. I got transferred to an infantry unit, the 31st Raiders. A heck of a squad, said Mal with sincerity. Damn straight we were. Not for nothing were we known as the Angel Makers. Wherever there was trouble, wherever the battle was at its thickest, that was where the 31st were sent. A couple of people in the crowd yelled, Hoorah! In support. Veterans of the same regiment, Mal presumed. There was no question the 31st Raiders had been one of the scrappiest units the Browncoats could boast. Their attrition rate was terrible. Life expectancy was around 3 weeks, a month if you were lucky. The fact that Toby had survived as long as he had was testament to his combat skill and tenacity. The little red-headed guy had been, it seemed, capable of meeting everything the Alliance could throw at him. I first fought alongside Malcolm Reynolds at the Battle of Dukang, Kobe said. The Raiders had taken some heavy hits lately, and we were merged into the whole Balls and Bayonets Brigade along with several other regiments, the 57th Overlanders included. Mal and I eventually got to meet up. That was some kind of reunion. Sure was, Mal said. I was right glad to see you. Friendly face from home. Felt kind of impossible that we'd both come through all we had. And now here we were, fighting alongside each other. Felt like it was meant to be. It did, Toby said almost wistfully. Even after all that happened on Shadow, I still thought of you as my friend. That was before. Before what? Before we were dispatched to Hera. Before we made camp in Serenity Valley. Before the day I dropped by your tent to say hi. The fighting hadn't started yet. We were digging in on our side. Alliance was digging in on the other. Both of us waiting on the attack command. Lull before the storm. I had a spare hour, so I made my way along the lines, found where the Overlanders were, looked for you. Someone directed me to your tent, but you weren't there. I decided to wait. That was when I saw your kit bag. It was open. I saw something inside, glinting. I couldn't help it. Had to check. I just got curious. And it was this. Toby delved into his pocket again, as he had when producing Ginny's homing beacon. This time he took out a silver crucifix pendant, roughly 3 inches long and 2 across, its arms as thick as a baby's finger. Tama de Huntan, Mal exclaimed. That's where that went. All this time, I thought I'd lost it. I ransacked my tent, went through my belongings 100 times, looked everywhere. He had even accused his corporal of stealing it. Given that she was Zoe Elaine, that had not gone down well. Mal was still amazed she had ever forgiven him. Toby pressed a recessed catch and the front of the crucifix sprang open. Inside lay circuitry. This, Toby said, holding up the device for all to see, is another homing beacon. Its circuitry is the exact double of the circuitry in the beacon on Ginny Adair's body, just in a different configuration. The two units were linked reciprocally, each keyed to the other's unique signature. I didn't know that when I first saw it. Some instinct told me there was a connection between this beacon and Ginny's, but I had no way of establishing that for sure. Not then. Not yet. But I took it. Yeah, you thieving rat bastard. You did, Mal snarled. I took it because suddenly things were starting to make sense. Things like how the Alliance knew exactly where the arms cache was at the Adairs, how they'd been able to precision target the cowshed, why Mal had said She was supposed to be safe. Ginny was supposed to be safe because Mal had come to an arrangement with the Alliance, and the Alliance had, surprise, surprise, reneged on it. "That just ain't it," Mal cried. "Those beacons were just so that Ginny and I would know each other was okay, is all. They were a way of us keeping tabs. The plan was she'd wear hers and I'd wear mine, and that way we'd each know the other was okay. Only that never happened because, well, we all know why. But I still kept that crucifix with me as a souvenir to remind me of her." Never once had he actually draped the pendant around his neck, however. Not only had the beacon become redundant and meaningless through the destruction of its counterpart and its counterpart's wearer, but the crucifix itself had started to seem that way too. Mal could pretty much date the loss of whatever religious faith he'd had to the day he lost Ginny Adair. "You're reading this all wrong, Toby," he went on. "You're making out as if there was this whole terrible conspiracy, and it's all just in your head. Come on, think about it. Why would I have one of those homing beacons too, if they were for giving away our location to the Alliance?" "To keep yourself safe," Toby said. "Alliance wouldn't touch you as long as they knew where you were. That second beacon is as incriminating as the first, if not more so. Didn't make much difference at Serenity Valley, for example. I damn near died there." "But you didn't before then," Toby declared. "That's just it. You, Sergeant Malcolm Reynolds, the Alliance's mole within the brown coat ranks, made it through a couple dozen previous hellstorms unscathed, all because you had that beacon. If you think that, then you—" "I think," Toby said with a sudden snap of authority, "that we have heard quite enough from you, Mal. You can protest till you're blue in the face. The evidence is all here. These two beacons are all the verification anyone needs. You are a traitor, a saboteur, and a collaborator. Right from the very start of the war, you were disloyal to the independent cause. Whether you intended it or not, Ginny Adair became a victim of your treachery. And in return, you got a free pass from the Alliance. I have stated my case. The arguments are more than persuasive. I shall now put it to the good people before us to tell us if they agree or disagree. A show of hands, if you please." Hands shot up in the air. There were growls of "yeah" and "yee-haw." "One or two abstainers, I see," said Toby. "Stu Deacons, David Zuburi. You've yet to be convinced? Well, it doesn't have to be unanimous for the motion to be carried. The yeas far outnumber the nays." Now the crowd swarmed forwards. The bald man who had brandished a noose earlier was once again ready with the length of rope. He and another brown coat slung the loose end over a cross brace of the drilling rig. Meanwhile, Donovan Phillips motioned Mal to walk backwards, using Mal's own Liberty hammer as a threat. "Stop there," Phillips said when Mal was next to the rig and right under the dangling noose. "Do anything dumb like try to resist and I'll put a bullet in you. Won't kill you. Gut shot. It'll hurt like hell and you'll hang anyway. You want that?" "Don't much want either," Mal said. "Everybody, listen up. I'm innocent. There is no way I would have endangered Ginny's life and no way I'd have helped out the Alliance. I am one of you. Always have been. Always will be." But he could scarcely make himself heard above the bang of the slavering, eager mob. Their eyes were bright with bloodlust. They had come for a hanging, and by thunder, they were going to get a hanging. This was the vigilante's primary purpose in life, a fire they had kept stoked in their bellies since the war ended. Someone had to pay for their defeat, and if that someone was another brown coat, why not? There'd been bad apples on both sides, and since they couldn't easily root out the ones on the Alliance's, they were rooting out the ones on their own. The noose was looped around Mal's neck, the roughness of the rope scratching his skin. "Remember Jamie, Mal?" Toby said. "Remember what Bundy and Crump tried to do to him and would have if You hadn't come along? Same again, only this time it's you who's getting strung up, and you know what? Nobody's coming. There ain't no cavalry, no last-minute reprieve. This is your time, Mal Reynolds. Make your peace if you can, but believe me when I say that hellfire awaits you. You're gonna burn for all eternity with all them other sinners, and you deserve every second of it, just for what you did to her. Before Mal could reply, Hans tightened the noose so that the knot was hard against the back of his head, and the loop constricted his throat. His airway wasn't quite cut off, but he could only just breathe and certainly could not speak. Mindful of the gun in Donovan Phillips' hand, he didn't squirm or fight. He had no doubt that Phillips would gut-shoot him if provoked. Even if he did get out of the noose somehow, a wound like that would kill him regardless, and slow. He was alive and well right up until the noose strangled him and his legs stopped kicking. Between now and then, there was always a chance, however slim, that he might still escape. These were the mad calculations rushing through his head, how to prolong the little life remaining to him, how to postpone death until the last possible moment. The bald man and his accomplice looked to Toby for final confirmation. Toby raised a hand and slashed it down through the air. Mal felt a tugging on the rope. All at once, he was rising into the air. It was only a few inches. His feet were still in contact with the cavern floor, but just barely. He teetered on his tiptoes, the noose biting into the underside of his jaw. His vision began to blur. He felt vertebrae in his neck creaking. Breaths came in short, gasping sips of air. This wasn't going to be a simple lynching, then. It was going to be torture. The vigilantes were going to draw out his death as long as they could. Their faces floated before him like lurid, gloating balloons. Their cries echoed thickly in his ears, seeming to come from underwater. Mal's toe caps scrabbled for purchase on the ground. Already, his legs were starting to ache from the effort of keeping him standing. Then, all at once, one foot slipped out from under him. The clench of the noose increased. Mal felt his heartbeat pounding in his head as he struggled to regain his balance. Like some ungainly ballerina, he managed to get back up onto the points of both feet. He remained suspended just above the cavern floor, swaying ever so slightly, twisting clockwise and anticlockwise. He heard some distant pig-like grunting noise and realized it was coming from his own throat. So this was how it was going to be. This was how it ended. The long, wayward, wild voyage of Malcolm Reynolds, from rumbustious kid to combat-hardened warrior to ship's captain. Along the way, there'd been triumphs, tragedies, and all points in between. But only in the recentmost portion had he found something like contentment. He owed that, he knew, to his crew, that mixed company of lost souls, misfits, and renegades. They were a family of sorts, the kind you made rather than were born into, the kind that came to surround you through twists of fate and a modicum of choice. They drove him mad sometimes, but he wouldn't have had them any different. While he'd held them together as their captain and guided them safely through the verse, he'd been doing something right, he decided. Something good. That, set in the plus column of his life, surely balanced out everything, and there was a lot of it, in the minus column. I've heard tell it can take a man up to 6 minutes to pass out during a short drop hanging, 20 minutes till he's actually dead. Sheriff Bundy's words came to him unbidden. How many minutes had it been so far? Mal couldn't even begin to tell. It might only have been 2 or 3, and the rope wasn't even strangling him fully yet. He felt the strength in his legs ebbing. He didn't know how much longer he could hold out. A haze was descending. Any moment now, he was going to sag in the noose, becoming so much dead weight. He hoped he would lose consciousness swiftly, sooner than Bundy's promised 6 minutes. There was a gunshot. From a million miles away, Mal felt himself jerk. He didn't know what it meant. It was time to die. 35. Zoe and Jane hurtled along the tunnel following the far-off roar of voices. The anger in that sound was palpable. She prayed she and Jane weren't too late. No mistake, they were getting closer to where they needed to be, but she couldn't help thinking there had been too many delays along the way. A delay in Serenity departing from Evesdown docks, a delay when the feds boarded, a delay in finding a reliable source of intelligence about Mal's whereabouts. That she and Jane were in the right place was no longer in doubt. Zoe, in fact, had been certain of it as soon as Wash set Serenity down at the mine entrance. Three spacecraft had been sitting there, one of them Serenity's own shuttle. Another was a yacht, which must have been Covington's, while the third was a Komodo-class resupply vessel, a war relic with the rust stains and impact pepperings all over the hull to prove it. Parts of it were salvaged from other ships, welded clumsily into place, giving it a patchwork appearance. She guessed it was the vigilante's mode of conveyance and felt an odd tug of admiration. Anyone who traveled the verse in a flying death trap like that deserved respect. Or locking up in a lunatic asylum. She and Jane hastened out of Serenity. Jane was more mobile than her and moved faster, loping along in limber fashion. Hampered by her bad leg, she struggled to keep up, but was determined not to lose ground to the big man. She had her mare's leg, Jane had Vera and Boo. They were both anticipating a gun battle and, each in their own way, looking forward to it. Zoe was also carrying something else, a remote detonator switch. While she ran, she pictured Wash and Kaylee in the cargo bay, firing up the forklift. They had their roles to fulfill, and if all went according to plan, there wouldn't be the need for anything except threats, not even gunplay. Yeah, since when did anything ever go according to plan? She and Jane burst out of the tunnel into a cavern. Zoe took stock of the situation at a glance. The crowd, the platform, the drilling rig. Mal, suspended from a noose, his eyes bulging, his face magenta. Everyone was too preoccupied to notice her and Jane's arrival. Jane? Yeah? Shoot the rope. Why not cut it? There's a crowd of people between us and Mal. They'll stop us before we even get close. There's no time, no other option. Shoot the rope. That's a hell of a tall order. 50 yards, dim light, rope shifting about. Just Goram, do it! Jane braced his legs apart and raised Vera to his shoulder, squinting as he peered down the rifle's sights. He switched from heavy caliber cartridge to light for greater accuracy. He took a breath and let it out slowly, forefinger tightening on the trigger. If anyone could make the shot, Zoe said to herself, it was Jane Cobb. Blam! Vera roared. The bullet struck the rope about 10 inches above Mal's head. Damn, Jane growled. He had nicked the rope rather than severed it. He readjusted his aim. In the meantime, a couple of dozen faces had turned his and Zoe's way. The rifle report had startled the crowd. Among them, Zoe saw Harlow in his familiar and still fashioned disastrous yellow duster. Harlow here? And he was with Hunter Covington. Bastard. He'd lied to her through his teeth. All along, he'd known exactly who Covington was. Her hand gripped her mare's leg hard. There was going to be a reckoning between him and her. Jane was lining up a second shot. Mal looked as though he was just about ready to expire. He was going limp. If Jane didn't cut the rope this time, Mal was dead. Don't let me down, girl, Jane muttered to his gun. Vera roared again. The rope snapped and Mal collapsed to the ground. A gaunt little man up on the platform yelled, No! The crowd were also aghast, and now, as one, they surged towards Zoe and Jane, the interlopers who had deprived them of their fun. Zoe held the remote detonator switch aloft, while Jane swiveled Vera to and fro in front of the browncoats menacingly. Everybody, she said, stop. Know what this is in my hand? Remote detonator. Know what it's connected up to? A crate of HTX-20. A crate that has been offloaded from my ship into the entrance to this mine. It's sitting there right now, and all I have to do is let go of this here button and boom. Cave in. We performed a ground radar survey as we came in, mapping the mine layout. There's only one way in or out, and that's through that tunnel. The HTX-20 brings the roof down, and we're all stuck here from now till doomsday. I am not kidding. The brown coat vigilantes paused, studying her face. To them, she really didn't look as though she was kidding. Shoot her, the man on the platform cried. One of you, shoot the bitch. Guns were drawn. Yeah, about that, Zoe said unflappably. If you look closely, you'll see it's a dead man's switch. I told you already, all I have to do is let go of the button. Anybody shoots me, guess what? I'll be letting go for damn sure. She will, Jane said. And in case you were wondering, this here's a Callahan full-bore auto-lock. A heavy caliber round from this bad boy hits you anywhere, even if it misses vital organs. The shock of the impact will still kill you. So you gotta ask yourself one question. Am I gonna be stupid enough to take the risk? Now, said Zoe, somebody, I don't much care who, is going to walk over to my friend there and loosen that rope off of him. She waited for a volunteer. Someone's got to do it, she said. Mood I'm in right now? I'm more than happy just to blow that high explosive and have done with it. You people call yourselves brown coats? This isn't how brown coats act. I was one, and I'm ashamed even to be around you. Trapping you all in this mine? That'd be worthwhile even if I'm stuck along with you. A man raised a hand. I'll do it, Zoe frowned. Deacons? That you? Sure is, Ms. Elaine. Been a while. You're with these people? I'd have thought better of you. To be honest, Corp, I'd have thought better of myself. I'll free him. Don't you do it, Stuart Deacons, the man on the platform yelled. Don't you dare. Oh, hush your squawking, Toby Finn, Deacons said. We've heard enough from you. If Zoe Elaine thinks Mal Reynolds is worth rescuing, and worth putting her own ass on the line for, what's more, then that settles it as far as I'm concerned. Mal ain't guilty of what you're accusing him of. The man deserves to go free. Toby Finn yanked a gun from his holster. Not another step, Deacons, I'm telling you. Jane swung Vera so that the gaunt little guy, evidently the ringleader of the vigilantes, was lined up in the reticle of his gun sight. Want I should take him out, Zoe? Not if you don't have to, Zoe replied. But he so much as twitches his trigger finger. Gotcha. Stuart Deacon's shoulder barged his way through the sullen crowd and knelt beside Mal. Mal lay so still that Zoe thought he must be dead. After all this, had everything been in vain? She choked back the fear. Mal was okay. Surely he was okay. Deacons untied the noose, then rolled Mal over onto his back. Someone else Zoe recognized, David Zuburi, joined him. Together, the two men conferred, then Deacons began to administer CPR to Mal, alternately pumping his chest and blowing into his mouth. Zoe watched, her grip on the detonator switch growing slick. 36. Outside the mine entrance, Wash drove the forklift back towards Serenity. He had just deposited, very carefully, a single crate of HTX-20, roughly 10 yards inside. Kaylee was standing on the cargo bay ramp. She looked jumpy, on edge, more so than previously. Why the face? Wash asked as he braked to a halt. We need to offload the other four crates. What? Kaylee held up a scanner. Just taken some fresh readings. The explosives are heating up faster than ever. They're going critical, and there ain't nothing I can think of to do to retard or reverse the process. I'd say we have maybe 10-15 minutes before they blow. Efe de Pillon, you've got to be kidding me. Wish I were. Badger sure handed us a Zhengqi Dugoshi Dui. Wouldn't surprise me if he did it on purpose. What for? To piss us off? If so, mission accomplished. I'm pissed off. But I'm not sure even Badger would be that much of a crap heel. Not when there's money involved. Okay, now, let's see what our options are. Wash surveyed the area. The mine entrance had been dug into a mountainside. Serenity and the other three ships were positioned on the only level space available, a broad, windswept ledge with a sheer crag towering above and a steep-sided base descending to a barren plain below. There wasn't room to deposit the crates on the ledge a safe distance away. If they went off there, all four ships would be damaged, probably destroyed, and everyone would be stranded on Hades. But if he tipped them over the edge, chances were they would explode when they hit the bottom. HTX-20 did not like nasty surprises, after all. That, in turn, might trigger a rock slide, and then there'd be a tangled mess of rubble and no longer space-worthy ship at the foot of the mountain. "No alternative," he said. "The other four crates have to go inside the mine entrance alongside the fifth." "That's insane. That's that or we lose Serenity, the shuttle, the yacht, and that Komodo heap of junk. We only put the one crate there in the first place in case somebody calls Zoe's bluff and goes to check that she can seal them inside if she wants to, like she's threatening," Kaylee said. "It's all a ruse, right? That's the plan. She's got the detonator switch only as a prop. In fact, thinking about it, we should get that crate out of the mine right now in case it blows up of its own accord. We shouldn't be putting another four of the Goram things in there."
"If we don't, we all die," said Wash. "If we do, there's a chance Zoe and Jane can still get back out, ideally with Mal, before all the crates go up. I don't like it any more than you do, Kaylee, but I don't see any other option."
Kaylee gnawed her lower lip, then slowly, reluctantly nodded. "They won't have long. They don't hurry. They're dead."
"And so are we," said Wash, gunning the forklift's motor.
37. Everything was dark where Mal was, and warm, and weirdly cozy. A nice place. He wanted to stay there. Then there was a stab of pain. Light flooded in. He heaved for a breath. There were a man's lips on his.
"Wait, wait, wait," Mal yelped, sitting bolt upright. "Stu, what the hell, partner?"
Stuart Deacon sat back on his haunches.
"You're back, Mal. Thank God. Thought for a moment there we'd lost you."
Mal's throat felt as though it was lined with sandpaper. To speak, even just to breathe, hurt. His head seemed to be attached to the rest of him by a slender thread. Yet he was alive. Sweet Mary, Mother of Jesus, he was alive. He blinked around. There was David Zuburi. There was Hunter Covington. There was Yellow Duster. There were all the browncoats looking somewhat disgruntled. No sign of Toby Finn, though. And Zoe. Jane. They were there, too?
"Sir," Zoe said across the cavern. "Glad to have you back."
"Me too. What kept you guys?"
"Oh, you know, this and that."
"Stu, you just resuscitate me?"
"I did.
That would explain the kissing. Leastwise, I hope it does. I owed you one for you saving my ass at New Casimir," Deacon said. "That was the least I could do."
"Next time, maybe you can show your gratitude in a less intimate manner."
Deacon smiled.
"Sure will. Weren't no picnic for me either. You ain't shaved lately, and you're kind of bristly."
"Snake!" someone yelled. "Defector! Goram Judas!"
Next thing Mal knew, Donovan Phillips was rushing towards them. He had Mal's Liberty hammer out, leveled it at Stuart Deacon's, and fired. The top of Deacon's head vanished in a crimson mist. Deacon slumped sideways, nothing on his face but a look of utter incomprehension. Mal moved faster than a man just brought back from the brink of death might reasonably be expected to. He sprang at Phillips, grabbing his gun hand. The pair of them grappled, each trying to gain mastery of the weapon. Phillips was at that moment the stronger of the two. He hadn't just been hanged. Mal, however, had blinding, all-consuming fury on his side. Stuart Deacons had proved himself to be a decent human being, after all, and this scum-sucking son of a bitch had shot him from behind like the coward he was. All at once, the Liberty hammer was in Mal's hand. He didn't hesitate. Phillips's scar-ridden face collapsed into terror. He held up his hands in surrender, but Mal was not in a merciful mood. He shot point blank at the heart, and Donovan Phillips was dead before he hit the ground. After that, consternation reigned. The browncoat vigilantes bellowed in shock and disapproval. They seemed to have forgotten all about Zoe and the detonator, until she reminded them by firing her mare's leg twice at the ceiling. That brought a measure of calm to the proceedings.
"Just a little reminder there," she said. "Now, you are going to let the three of us leave. You are not going to get in our way. To reiterate, I am quite prepared to let go of this switch at any time. Don't anyone give me a reason to. Sir? Mal was on his feet and moving away from the drilling rig, but not towards Zoe and Jane. Toby Finn was gone. He had lit out while Mal was unconscious. There was a second tunnel leading out from the cavern, not towards the entrance, but in the opposite direction, presumably deeper underground. Toby could only have disappeared down there. Mal was determined to catch up to him. He and Toby needed to have words. Sir, Zoe hollered behind him, but Mal paid her no heed. He headed off down the tunnel, stumbling on its rugged, uneven rock floor. Toby, he called out. Toby, I just want to talk. Illumination from the cavern diminished the further he ventured in. Soon he was walking more or less blind, groping his way with one hand held out in front of him, the Liberty Hammer in his other hand. Toby, hey, pal, stop running. We can sort things out. We were two of the four amigos once. Don't see why we can't be that way again. The gun Mal was carrying somewhat gave the lie to what he was saying. Truth was, he would just as happily shoot Toby dead as reconcile with him. Much depended on how Toby acted now. If he showed even the tiniest amount of remorse or contrition, Mal might, just might, mind, be able to find it in his heart to forgive him. Come on, old buddy, why don't you... If his brain hadn't still been fogged from the near hanging, he might have seen the blow coming. Might have been able to duck out of the way. As it was, something came out of nowhere and slammed into his face, knocking him flat. The Liberty Hammer flew from his grasp, skidding across the tunnel floor. His head reeled. He'd been slugged with the butt of a pistol. He gasped for air. No, Mal, said Toby, a black silhouette in the dimness. We can't be friends again. There can't be any four amigos again because you ruined it. A gun barrel loomed in Mal's vision. His own gun lay several yards away, well out of easy reach. By killing Jenny? Mal said hoarsely. But it wasn't anything to do with me. You must know that. Those homing beacons were for me and her alone.
Yes, and I know why. Toby was all but screaming. I know about you and Jenny. I knew just what you were doing behind my back.
Mal fumbled for words.
But, what, you knew?
But why didn't you
say anything at the time? How could I, Mal? It was almost over between Ginny and me. I could feel it, but I didn't want it to end. Damn it, I was going to marry that woman. I had it all planned out, but I was losing her, and I began to notice little things, little clues that suggested maybe her heart belonged to someone else. You. Like, she would pause whenever your name came up in conversation. Sometimes she would avoid talking about you, steering around the subject like it was a boulder in the road. Before then, her face used to light up when you were mentioned, and suddenly it started darkening instead. I wasn't sure about it. I couldn't be certain she was cheating on me with you, but then, why wouldn't she be? You were the dashing Mal Reynolds, and me? I was just lowly little Toby Finn, not fit to tie the bootlaces of a girl like Ginny Adair. I'd lucked into becoming her boyfriend, but it was clear you and she were a better fit.
Toby, I'm sorry, Mal said.
Truly, I am. You can spare me the apologies. They don't mean squat.
Maybe you could have said something at the time. Maybe we could have figured it out.
I didn't know for certain, Toby said, and I was scared to raise the topic in case I was wrong. It wasn't until Ginny died and I saw how you were about that, how cut up, that I realized I'd been right. Even then, I'd have forgiven you, in time. But the war came and we went our separate ways until Hera, until that day I went to your tent and found the second beacon. That's when everything clicked into place.
All of this, Mal said, piecing things together. Kidnapping me, trying me, hanging me. This isn't about me betraying the independent cause. It never was. You know I didn't. That stuff about the beacons, that was just for the browncoats. A smokescreen. This is all about revenge, isn't it?
Toby seemed as though he was going to deny it, then shook his head ruefully.
Yeah. Not that I don't believe in what me and these other browncoats have been doing. Rounding up true traitors and bringing them to justice, it's been a necessary evil. But you and me, Mal, this one's personal. I've been waiting for this a long time. Only now did the stars align and everything come together. You got the rest of them to go along with it, even though you know the case against me was as flimsy as rice paper. Wasn't difficult. They're disgruntled, easily led. They've been at this so long, they've begun to lose sight of why. They just love the blaming and the accusing and the executing. Makes them feel good about themselves, and you've seen them. Do those look to you like people who've many reasons to feel good about themselves? Some of them needed more talking round than others, but we got there in the end. We paid Hunter Covington just about every piece of platinum we could scrape together in order to get a lead on you. Seemed a fair price. I even plundered my own savings, such as they were. Don't have a single coin left to my name. Yeah, but wasn't what you were doing dangerous to you? Mightn't it have backfired if the others had realized this thing was just a whole dog and pony show? If so, what do I care? Toby said with a hapless shrug. My time's running out anyway. Mal's eyesight was adjusting to the gloom. Toby's face looked pallid and haggard, a wreck of its old self. You ain't well, are you? Mal said. You're seriously sick. What is it? Damp lung? Wilson's palsy? Cancer. The terminal kind. All over. The whole meal. Soup to nuts. Toby. Got it, cause of my spacesuit's shielding failing, it's Sturgis, most likely. Docs reckon I must have received a dose of cosmic radiation. Not enough to fry me on the spot, but enough to send a few internal organs gradually haywire. The war's finally catching up with me after all these years. I'm a dead man walking, but at least I finally got to see you paying the penalty for what you did to me. Toby, maybe there's a cure, Mal said. I have a doctor on board my ship, a really good one. He can try and fix you. He can't, Mal. Nobody can. You know what, though? I thought I'd be happier to see you on the end of a rope. I really did. But somehow it just made me sad. Toby's voice was thick, husky. He sounded close to crying. Sad that it's come to this, and sad for all that we lost. Not just Jamie and Ginny, not the millions of men and women the war killed, the innocents. The fun we used to have on Shadow, fooling around, getting chased by Bundy. They were good times, weren't they, Mal? The best, Toby. The best. Now Toby really was crying, deep sobs racking his body. Oh God, Mal, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I shouldn't have, I should never... Toby's gun had begun to droop in his grasp. Mal cast a quick sidelong glance towards his own gun. If he could just keep this conversation going a few seconds longer, keep Toby distracted and off beam, he might be able to make a bid for the Liberty Hammer. He tensed, ready to bat Toby's gun aside and lunge for his own weapon. It's okay, Toby. We're good. Come on. Help me up and let's go see if we can't... A shot rang out. Toby's body jolted. He fell against the tunnel wall, then slid down to the floor. Mal, ears ringing from the detonation, turned to see Jane standing some 20 feet away. Vera was in his hands, smoke coiling up from her muzzle. Got him, Jane said with cold satisfaction. You okay, Mal? Mal looked back at Toby Finn, now just an inert heap, chin on sternum, blood on his breastbone, glistening in the faint light. In a way, he was glad Jane had shot Toby. Even after everything, he mightn't have been able to do it himself. In fact, he reckoned Jane had done Toby a favor. Toby had been dying anyway. Jane had only hastened what was inevitable, ending his life quickly, unexpectedly, rather than leaving him to be eaten away an inch at a time by the slow horror of cancer. Come on, Jane said. We gotta go. Don't know how much longer Zoe's going to be able to keep the vigilantes at bay with that detonator switch, Con. They're getting all kinds of antsy.
Con? Jane brought Mal up to speed on the plan involving the crate and the detonator.
Not bad, Mal said. Kind of sneakiness I might have come up with.
Wearily, he got to his feet and retrieved his gun. He couldn't remember when he had ever felt quite so tired, or so old. Jane turned back down the tunnel, and Mal staggered after. 38. Back in the cavern, Zoe was indeed finding it increasingly hard to keep the brown coats restrained. Sonia Zuburi was giving her all manner of grief, calling her names and making feints towards her, trying to grab the detonator switch. Even back during the war, there had never been much love lost between Zoe and Sonia. She'd been a good soldier, but Zoe, even on her worst day, was 10 times better. And whereas Zoe had been fast-tracked to corporal, Sonia had remained a humble private to the bitter end. That had been a source of great anguish and frustration to Sonia, and she had tried to undermine Zoe every chance she got.
You won't do it, bitch, Sonia goaded. You don't have the balls.
At least I don't keep my husband's in a purse, Zoe retorted. Someone sniggered, and Sonia shot them a filthy look. David Zuburi himself seemed unamused, but appeared to acknowledge that there was some truth in Zoe's taunt. Out of the corner of her eye, Zoe saw Hunter Covington and Harlow sneaking towards the exit tunnel. She would have to deal with them later. Right now, what mattered was the angry browncoats. Where the hell was Jane? She had sent him off in pursuit of Mal. He surely should have found him by now. There was a gunshot from the tunnel Jane had followed Mal into. Zoe recognized the deep, bassy boom of Vera. Moments later, Jane emerged from the tunnel with Mal in tow. The already irate browncoats became more irate still.
Where's Toby Finn? Someone demanded to know. What have you done with him?
Zoe could tell the situation was about to spiral into chaos. Not even the threat of blowing up the mine entrance was going to keep a lid on it much longer. She began backing towards the tunnel, the barrel of her mare's leg tracking this way and that, pausing at random browncoats and curbing their aggression, if only temporarily.
I will shoot, Zoe warned, backing towards the exit. I don't want to, but I will if I have to, and anyone who knows me knows I am not the type to make idle threats.
Nonetheless, the crowd kept edging closer, inciting one another forwards. An array of guns bristled around Zoe.
Let's rush her, Sonia said. Somebody grabs her hand, clamps it tight around that switch, there'll be nothing she can do.
Then Jane and Mal were at Zoe's side. That gave her a little more leverage, and the browncoats knew it. They weren't up against a lone gunwoman anymore, but a trio.
We're out of here, Jane said to the crowd, and I'd advise anyone who's thinking about getting in our way to not to. Get in our way, that is. Or even think about it.
As they retreated towards the entrance, Zoe kept an eye out for Covington and Harlow, who might be lying in wait somewhere along the tunnel. In her judgment, however, the two men wouldn't be hanging around. Instead, they'd be making for Covington's yacht and hightailing it off Hades as fast as they could. Neither was any slouch when it came to self-preservation, she thought, and they must have realized that if it came to a shootout between the browncoats and Zoe, Jane, and Mal, there was a good chance of getting caught in the crossfire. She was mistaken about that, and nearly got a bullet through the head for her pains. Where the tunnel jinked round a corner, Harlow was lurking. If Zoe hadn't caught a glimpse of the tail of his absurd yellow duster, she might not have been able to dodge in time. Her mare's leg thundered a riposte, blasting away a section of rock just inches from Harlow's hiding place.
Mr. Covington told me to delay you people, Harlow called out. Offered me damn good money for it, too, so that's what I'm gonna do.
Zoe looked at Jane, put a finger to her lips, and gestured at him to pass Boo over to her. Jane duly unholstered the wheel gun, giving her a mildly quizzical frown. Zoe responded with a trust me look. For what she had in mind, her mare's leg wouldn't do. She needed a solid round, not buckshot.
Harlow, she said, softly cocking Boo's hammer, listen, let us pass, and we won't kill you. Nah, figure I'll just pin you three down where you are. Those brown coats are coming, I can hear them. They're following you up the tunnel. If I keep you there till they catch up, you'll have plenty on your plate, and Mr. Covington and me, we can just mosey on home at our leisure.
I wish you'd said you knew all along who Covington was and what this was all about. Zoe began inching towards him, covering the sound of her advance by talking. Would have made a difference.
Fooled you, huh, Hopalong? And I led you a merry dance through Evesdown as well, didn't I? After we parted company, I knew you'd follow me, so I gave you the runaround. I thought winding up at Badger's was a stroke of genius. Figure he'd tangle you up if nothing else did.
Closer she crept, ever closer, the wheel gun at the ready.
Yeah, you're a smart operator, all right, Harlow.
She studied the formation of the tunnel wall. The angles were just about right. It all depended on how good her eye was.
A real cool customer.
You'd have to be, to pull off that 10-gallon hat and puke-yellow duster combo.
Don't be like that. I thought we'd reached a kind of understanding, you and me.
Oh, we have, Zoe said, lining up her shot. I understand that you're a gasbag idiot who loves the sound of his own voice. And me? I'm the one who's about to deflate you.
Now what in the hell do you mean by...
Zoe fired. The round ricocheted once, twice, and then Harlow gave a kind of "ugh" sound and toppled forward into view, thudding to the tunnel floor. He groaned, blood leaking from the corner of his mouth.
That was some nice shooting, Hopalong. Damn nice. And to think, you and me, we could have had something special.
His eyes rolled white, his mouth slackened, his eyelids closed, and he was gone. Zoe tossed Boo back to Jane, who caught and holstered the wheel gun in a single smooth action. From behind, the clamor of the approaching browncoats grew louder.
Come on, she said to Mal and Jane.
Nearing the tunnel entrance, the three Serenity crew members were greeted by Wash. He was just depositing the last of the five crates inside the tunnel.
Wash, what the hell's this? Said Zoe. We only needed one crate, not the whole Gorham lot.
Yeah, well, about that, said Wash. Turns out we're going to have to dump all of them here.
Our entire cargo? Said Mal. You better have a good reason.
Great to see you too, Captain. Glad you're well.
Never mind that. Get these damn crates back on my ship.
No can do. Kaylee says the HTX-20 is about to go off, and when that happens, it's best we're not around.
She sure about that?
I don't think she's just saying it for comedic effect.
Goramit, Mal said. We never catch a break, do we?
From outside came a high-pitched whine of a ship's engine powering up, resounding down the tunnel.
Oh yeah, that'll be Covington's yacht, Wash said. He ran past me a couple of minutes ago. Didn't even stop to say hi. Guess he was in too much of a hurry. Pity, though.
Why?
I had Kaylee sneak aboard his ship. She's disabled it. Listen to that.
The engine noise stuttered, then became a horrendous metallic gurgle. Zoe pictured the yacht shuddering from stem to stern like a vomiting cat.
Covington's going nowhere in a hurry.
Kaylee's detached his pulse alternator and left it hanging off by its wires. It's an easy fix, assuming he figures out that's what the problem is. Jane and Mal hurried onward to the entrance. Zoe clambered onto the side of the forklift next to her husband.
My leg's playing merry hell, she said. Mind giving a girl a lift?
Don't normally pick up hitchhikers, but for you, pretty lady, I'll make an exception.
Wash deftly spun the vehicle around on its axis and drove it out into daylight. Just as they neared Serenity, shots crackled from the tunnel entrance. Rounds wanged and whined off the forklift's bodywork. Wash ducked and swore while Zoe leaned around and returned fire, her mare's leg booming. Mal and Jane from the cargo bay ramp added their own salvos to hers. The vigilantes were positioned just inside the tunnel mouth, some distance past the five crates of explosive. It seemed they were keen that the people who had disrupted their lynching should not get away scot-free. Sonia Zaburi was the one egging them on.
We can still take them down, she yelled.
Her husband David at her side looked less convinced.
Hold your fire. Zoe called out to them. All of you, listen.
She was shouting at the top of her voice, but above the sound of gunfire, she was inaudible to the browncoats. Still, she persevered.
Those crates are about to blow, and when they do, they'll bring this entire mountain down around our heads. The vigilantes carried on with their broadside. Only David Zuburi seemed to have heard what Zoe had said. He was gesticulating and calling for a ceasefire, but he might as well have been dancing a jig for all the difference it made. Serenity's shuttle abruptly burst into life. Zoe glimpsed Kaylee at the controls. Kaylee offered her a brief wave before goosing the engines to the very limits of their tolerance and launching. Wash scooted the forklift up the cargo bay ramp and was off and running for the bridge before the vehicle had even come to a full stop.
What about Covington? Zoe asked Mal. We can't just leave him there, can we?
Don't see why not. Guy's a bondholder and an all-around shark. He's got a chance to get away if he can mend what Kaylee did to his boat. If he can't, that's his tough datiao.
Serenity began rumbling around them. Over the intercom, Wash said, Know those wonderfully genteel laid-back takeoffs I'm so famous for? This ain't gonna be one of them. Hang on tight, everyone.
The ship lurched skyward with enough force to throw Mal, Jane, and Zoe off kilter. Zoe felt the downward press of G-force, like a giant invisible hand trying to squash her flat, and bent her knees to absorb it as best she could. Serenity seemed to be fighting for every inch of altitude she gained. Zoe had no idea when the HTX-20 was going to explode, but she knew she didn't want to be anywhere near when it happened. Then it came. A percussive blast like every thunderclap there had ever been all rolled into one. It was followed by the tumult of the overpressure wave seizing Serenity and shaking the ship about like an infant with a toy rattle. Zoe, Mal, and Jane grabbed whatever they could for support. There was a series of sickening swoops and soars, pitches and yaws like riding the worst roller coaster ever. In her mind's eye, Zoe saw Wash up on the bridge battling to maintain control of the spacecraft and keep her on an even keel. No one could fly like Hoban Washburn. It was one of the articles of faith in Zoe's life. If anybody could get them through this safely, it was him. Sometime later, seconds of juddering upheaval that felt like hours, Serenity righted and leveled out. Zoe staggered over to the nearest rearward viewing port. Below, a mountain was dying. Its slopes were sinking inward on themselves, sending up a mighty pillar of dust and debris like smoke from the cauldron of a volcano. Huge chunks of rock had sheared away and were slithering down towards the plain some quarter mile below. Amidst the tumbling avalanche, she glimpsed Covington's yacht and the vigilante's Komodo-class vessel. Both were rolling end over end, losing sections of hull plate and chunks of airframe along the way. They crashed to the bottom and were engulfed by rubble. Of the browncoats themselves, there was no sign, but then Zoe wasn't expecting any. They would have been vaporized when the HTX-20 went up. She wished she felt sorrier for them than she did. Mal appeared beside her and looked on as the mountain continued to implode, shelving down into itself, becoming a crater. Gradually, the turmoil receded into the distance as Serenity gained more height.
Care to tell me what this was all about, sir?
She asked as the pale blue of Hades' atmosphere started shading into the inky blue of low-orbit space.
Long story, Zoe, Mal said forlornly. Long story from long, long ago. Another time, maybe. Right now, my throat's as parched as a sidewinder's belly, and I believe there may be a bottle of sorghum wine somewhere in the galley. Care to join me?
You have some baijiu? Jane said. That rot gut? I'm in.
If it's not considered insubordination, sir, Zoe said, I would rather go up to the bridge and smooch with my husband. I reckon he's earned it.
Know what? Said Mal, with just a hint of the old familiar twinkle returning to his eyes.
I reckon he has and all.
So we're all back on one boat again, the nine of us. Serenity has both her shuttles nestled on her wings, the chicks back with Mama Bird, and we're heading off once more into the black to see what we can find work-wise. The usual deal, whatever's going, if it pays, we'll take it. Sorry state of affairs, but that's how it is.
Ain't a kind or a just verse, and nobody's owed a living.
Simon says my neck's healing nicely. Rope burns won't even leave a scar, thanks to his doctrine. Talking still hurts some, but on this boat, with Wash and Kaylee to name but two, it ain't as if there's a scarcity of chitter-chatter.
Badger was rightly mad about his explosives. I pointed out that at least they'd blown up somewhere off my ship, because if they'd destroyed Serenity and I hadn't been on board, right now I'd be introducing him to the business end of a gun, shooting off little bits of him one after another. And if I had been on board, my ghost would be haunting him till the day he died. Guess he feels I owe him one. Guess I feel we're quits. Besides, Badger will get over it. He's what you call the resilient type. Too plain opportunistic or optimistic or whatever to burn a bridge permanently. Elmira Adedima is a free woman now. Book's pal, Mika Wong, didn't even need to pay off her debt, what with Hunter Covington being buried under a mountain and no longer in a fit state to collect and all, so he was pleased about that. I met Elmira for all of 5 minutes after we'd rendezvoused on Persephone with Book, Inara, and the Tams. Even in that brief span of time, she made an impression. Despite all she'd been through as a bondswoman and a confidential informer, all that suffering and peril, she seemed as if she was coping and would be able to move on with her life. Like Badger, resilient. Also, unlike Badger, not a pain in the ass. And now that we're flying free, I've got time to think. About the past. About lost loves. Damaged friendships and heart-wrenching regrets. I won't ever be free of Jamie and Toby, I reckon. Wasn't free of Ginny before. But it does seem as though some things that needed fixing have been fixed and some loose ends squared away. Maybe if Ginny and me had been honest with Toby from the start, none of this would have happened. It was Ginny's call, though, and I went along with it because I respected her decision and I loved her. You can't change the past, and you can't do aught but rue the way you sometimes acted back when you were young and stupid and thought you were immortal. Doesn't prevent you from wishing you could. I've been thinking about stopping by Shadow, although not sure I'm up for that. I hear there's plants pushing up through the cinders now around the spot where the Adair's cowshed stood. I might like to see that for myself. But then I mightn't want to reopen those old wounds either. Might also pay a call on Sheriff Bundy, Governor Bundy, whatever his title is these days, assuming the overweight bastard's still alive and some clogged artery of his hasn't popped. Maybe he and I can have words, get to the bottom of what happened. And if he did what I think he did, I'll teach him the error of his ways. Maybe some other time. For now, we'll do what we do. Find a job, keep flying. Captain Malcolm Reynolds.
This concludes the reading of Firefly, Big Damn Hero by James Lovegrove. Original story concept by Nancy Holder. Trademark and copyright 2018 by 20th Century Fox Film Corporation. All rights reserved. This book was read by James Anderson Foster. This unabridged recording was produced in 2019. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Publishing. If you would like to obtain a monthly update telling you about new releases, call 1-800-SAY-BOOK. That's 1-800-729-2665. For a complete listing of our titles, visit our website at www.downpour.com. Thank you.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.